We're in Galatians chapter 4. And I'm just going to pick it up and read from verse 1 to the point where we're going to pick up together. My point is this: heirs, as long as they are minors, are no better than slaves, though they are owners of all the property. But they remain under guardians and trustees until the date set by the father. So with us. While we were minors, we were enslaved to the elemental spirits of the world. But when the fullness of time had come, God sent his son, born of a woman, born under the law, in order to redeem those who were under the law, so that we might receive adoption as children. And because we are children, God has sent the Spirit of his Son into our hearts, crying, Abba, Father. So you are no longer a slave, but a child. And if a child, then also an heir through God. What's this phrase, Abba, Father, here in verse 6? Abba, Father, in verse 6. In Greek,
Repetition.
In Greek, Abba, ha, pater. Abba. That's... What language is Abba from?
Our Bible says it's Arabic.
No, it doesn't.
Aramaic.
Yes.
From
that. It's from Aramaic, which is a form of Hebrew, later Hebrew. It is the Hebraic way of proclaiming Father. But it's not so much the formal way as it is what a child would say to call upon his or her father. Hence, daddy. Yes, daddy. Hence, daddy. Daddy, and then pater, Greek for father. Daddy, daddy. Father, father, Abba, father, daddy, father, even daddy, daddy. This repetition. God has sent the Spirit of his Son into our hearts, crying, Daddy, Daddy. What do you think it means to cry out to God, Daddy, 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 Father? What do you think that means?
It's more of a familiar closeness.
Well, the relationship of the Jews with the Creator, with Yahweh, with the Lord, was not a close one in the sense that they never felt comfortable getting close to him. In fact, they were afraid of him. Send Moses up the mountain to talk to God. We want to stay down here at the foot and not even get him close. We're afraid of...
Yeah, we think you can strike his dead.
Yeah, we'll be mush. And rightfully so. There was a separation, there was a difference, there was a distance created between God and people because of the people's sins. There was a wall of separation between the Holy of Holies and the court where the people were. There you stayed away because to get close to that glory would wipe you out. Would destroy you because of your sinfulness. Jesus now brings a relationship with God that is no longer bound by that reality. Notice it says, we are no longer distant, we are now adopted children. And because you are children, God has sent the Spirit, the Holy Spirit, of his Son into our hearts so that we can do what Jesus does, proclaim the Creator, Father, and not O Holy Father, distant and awesome from us, but Daddy, Father, take my hand kind of image. Because of who Jesus is, what Jesus does for us, and His Holy Spirit living within us, we can now relate to God, Daddy, whereas before we could not. And the repetition, the repeated proclamation, what do you think that might hint at?
I mean, it's two different words, though. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's
Abba, Pater. One is in Aramaic, one is in Greek.
Would it be impossible?
One is simple, childish. One is more formal and distant. But one redefines the other, you might even say. That which is distant, pater, becomes close, Abba. Father of all, not just the father of the Hebrews, but the father of Jews. Not just the father of Hebrews, but the father of Gentiles too. Abba, pater. That could be understood there too. It's two different words with slightly different meanings aiming at the same thing. And I like the idea, and this is what some commentators say, the traditional understanding when you used pater for the God was a more formal and distant one. And what this proclamation, Abba, is doing is it's saying, it's no longer distant. It's now close. As Jesus said, Father, and meant it, as we would say, Daddy. So now we can say Father and mean it as when we say Daddy. It's a change in relationship for us because we are now adopted and as much the Son of God as Jesus through adoption.
Doesn't it also give that sense of the daddy part is the closeness of the individual, but the father or the pater is still him being so divine and so large. I mean, it would be the same, and then I'm going to use a poor analogy, but like the president's son or daughter calling their father, father. He's still the president.
Okay.
And still has that status and so forth, but you still have the closeness of the individual.
While our relationship has changed, the identity of the Father has not. He is still holy. He is still righteous. He's still in charge. He's still God. He hasn't changed. We have.
So that second one brings that level of respect even to the closeness.
It points out the reality that the one who changes is us. The relationship changes because we have been changed. The relationship changes because of what Jesus did for us in our place and then gives to us the Spirit that then cries out, Abba, Pater, Daddy, Father. We have been changed. Our position has been changed. He is still Pater. He is still the Creator. He is still in charge. He is still God. But now we may now relate to him as Jesus relates to him.
The curtain come down.
Huh?
The curtain come down.
The curtain comes down. We are ushered in through adoption. And if it were not for that, if it were not for Jesus, and if it were not for him standing in our place, taking the penalty and dying, if it were not for him standing there, metaphorically speaking, we'd still be wiped out. But because of Jesus and his Spirit within us, we can proclaim, Abba, Father. And because you are children, God has sent the Spirit of his Son into our hearts, crying, Abba, Pater. It's the Spirit doing the cry. Because we have become adopted sons, We are, in that sense, because of the presence of the Spirit of the Son in us, we are now sons of God. So, you are no longer a slave, but a son, a child. And if a child, if a son, then also an heir through God. Formerly, when you did not know God, you were enslaved to beings that by nature are not gods. Now, however, that you have come to know God, or rather be known by God, how can you turn back again to the weak and beggarly elemental spirits? How can you want to be enslaved to them again? You are observing special days and months and seasons and years. I fear for you that perhaps I have labored over you in vain. A little bit of despair there. A little bit of despair. I fear that everything, all of the efforts, all of the gospel has been in vain. You've gone back to worshiping the creation and not the Creator. You've gone back to depending upon empty, dead rituals and formularies. You've gone back to the religion and have abandoned the relationship of Abba, Father. Verse 12. Weldon, pick it up at verse 12 and read verses 12 through 15 to begin with.
I beg of you, brethren, become as I am, for I also have become as you are. You have done me no wrong. But you know that it was because of a bodily illness that I preached the gospel to you the first time. And that which was a trial to you in my bodily condition, you did not despise or loathe. But you received me as an angel of God, as Jesus Christ himself.
You know that it was because of a physical infirmity that I announced the gospel to you. He had been ill, and so he preached amongst them. He couldn't travel, apparently, continue on. So he stayed there while sick, and he preached to them. And they didn't reject him just because he was ill. Remember, in that day and age, illness was a sign of demonic oppression. And if someone was sick, they must have done something wrong to get sick. And so you stayed away from such people. But they welcomed him anyway. They welcomed him anyway, even despite the physical infirmity, the illness, whatever it was, the bodily illness that he had. And it says, though my condition puts you to the test. I mean, they probably, you know, if left to their own devices, would normally have simply rejected him and wouldn't have listened to him and certainly wouldn't have received him in. And yet they did. Though my condition put you to the test, you did not scorn or despise me, but welcome me as an angel of God. As an angel of God. So contrary to how they normally would receive people who were ill, they received him as an angel of God, a messenger of God, which is exactly what he was, proclaiming the gospel.
You must have quite a physical manifestation of whatever this was.
Some illness, some sickness that was rather gross.
That's what I'm saying. Because this one says physical condition. What did Pat interpret it?
Something that made it impossible for him to travel, that was noticeable, was gross, that caused him severe difficulty, that normally people would reject and not want to be around him. Now, I want to tell you, volumes upon volumes of scholarly dissertations, yes, speculations have been issued as to what this was, but we don't know. It had to have been bad enough that he couldn't travel, whatever that was, and it had to be ugly enough that it was immediately noticeable and normally people would reject it.
Well, wasn't there, there's evidence at times that he had some kind of eye problems, you know, it's like...
Yes, that's often...
I don't
often,
know from here, but from...
That's often been speculated that he had some kind of possibly lingering leftover problem from the blindness, but there's no solid... scales from his eyes has often been described. We don't know. As I said, speculation upon speculation has been issued about this.
I can imagine some eye infections could look pretty close.
And if you have severe eye infection that makes it difficult for you to travel because you can't see, you need to be able to see to travel. Now, one of the theories is, and it's actually an interesting theory, I kind of like it, it's that he actually suffered from periodic burst blood vessels in his eyes.
So his eyes are red.
Would make his eyes red. Which would not make him a messenger of God. It would make him a messenger of the other guy.
Having seen...
So that's one theory. And then, of course, that theory has been occasioned by the thinking that Paul might very well have been, you know, had high blood pressure or some other issues. Which couldn't result in that. Possibly, but again, that's speculation.
Well, you know, one of the things that he could have had that would have been a physical manifestation, but he would have really been rejected, would if he'd have come down with something like leprosy.
Leprosy?
But, you know, the Jews, for sure, I don't know about the Gentiles, but I bet the Gentiles would have stayed away from him, too.
Leprosy was rejected not just by Jews, but also by Gentiles. Another ailment, which was common enough, in which you were either viewed as a great spiritual person or you were shunned as a demoniac, was epilepsy.
Prophesying, huh?
Epilepsy.
Yeah, what you're saying.
You were either, it was kept secret, and the people who kept it secret did so thinking there was really something special about you, i.e. Julius Caesar, who was an epileptic, or... you were known of and thought of as a demoniac, and it depended upon the degree of epilepsy that you had frequently as to how you were interpreted. Now, that's another theory, that he might have had been prone to certain epileptic seizures, which can cause all sorts of things like burst blood vessels in your eyes. We come back to that one. That's a favorite, a long-time favorite. Again, it's all speculation. And we don't know. We just don't know. He doesn't tell us enough here. And it's not always easy to connect this instance with some other instances and events that we know of. And the Acts of the Apostles also don't tell us. So we just have to pass on, recognize that there was some event, some visibly obvious physical ailment that caused him to reside in Galatia and preach amongst them. And they didn't reject him because of the ailment. Instead, they received him warmly and heard the gospel despite it. Keep reading, Weldon, verses 15 through 17.
What happened to this blessedness of yours? For I testify to you that, if possible, you would have torn out your eyes and given them to me.
Keep going.
Have I now become your enemy by telling you the truth? They are enthusiastic about you, but not for any good. Instead, they want to isolate you so you will be enthusiastic about them. Now, it is always good to be enthusiastic about good, and not just when I am with you. My children, again, I am in the pains of childbirth for you until Christ is formed in you. I'd like to be with you right now and change my tone of voice because I don't know what to do about you.
Yes. And, of course, more of that speculation. They would have ripped their eyes out and given. Yeah, we're in chapter 4 of Galatians, around verse 16 right now. Verse 15. What has become of the goodwill you felt? For I testify that, had it been possible, you would have torn out your eyes and given them to me. More of that speculation has arisen. definitely something wrong that specifically was oriented with his eyes, which of course would make it difficult for him to travel, possibly. Now, just a burst blood vessel in your eye wouldn't do it. There'd have to be something occasioning that burst blood vessel that would make it difficult for him to travel. Or it could be something else, some other problem with his eyes that interrupted his vision that made it difficult for him to travel and would normally have caused people to stay away from him, but here caused them to welcome him in. And he's using their welcoming then, even in the face of such a horrible situation, that they would have gladly ripped out their own eyes and given them to him had they been able to do that. They had such a wonderful love for him at that time. What's happened to that now? That's the reversal here of the situation. What has become? Where then is that sense of blessing you had? For I bear you witness that if possible you would have plucked out your eyes and given them to me. Or what has become of the goodwill you felt? Have I now become your enemy by telling you the truth? You gotta remember there, they were saying that Paul really wasn't a friend of theirs. He didn't tell them everything. He didn't tell the guys they had to be circumcised. He didn't tell the women they had to start cooking kosher. No. He says, have I now become your enemy by telling you the truth? They make much of you, but for no good purpose. They want to exclude you so that you may make much of them. They want to lord it over you. They want to exclude you. They want to make much of you. Look what we've done. We've taken these Gentile, now converts to Christianity, and made them good Jews. Yeah. Look at the scalps we've got, so to speak. They make much of you, but for no good purpose. They want to exclude you so that you may make much of them. They want you to recognize how good they are. How important they are. It is good to be made much of for a good purpose at all times, and not only when I am present with you. My little children, for whom I am again in the pain of childbirth until Christ is formed in you, I wish I were present with you now and could change my tone, for I am perplexed about you. This whole situation is like giving birth to kids. This hurts. This hurts. I am perplexed about you. I wish I could change my tone, but I can't. Okay, Chris, mm-hmm. Verses 21 through 26.
Okay. Tell me, you who want to be under the law, are you not aware of what the law says? For it is written that Abraham had two sons, one by the slave woman and the other by the free woman. His son by the slave woman was born in the ordinary way, but his son by the free woman was born as a result of a promise. These things may be taken figuratively, for the women represent two covenants. One covenant is from Mount Sinai and bears children who are to be slaves. This is Hagar. Now Hagar stands for Mount Sinai in Arabia and corresponds to the present city of Jerusalem. Because she is in slavery with her children, but the Jerusalem that is above is free, and she is our mother. For it is written, I'm sorry, I went too far.
Keep going.
Be glad, O barren woman, who bears no children. Break forth and cry aloud, you who have no labor pains, because more are the children of the desolate women than of her who has a husband. And keep going.
Keep going.
Now you, brothers, like Isaac, are children of promise. At that time, the son born in the ordinary way prosecuted the son born by the power of the Spirit. It is the same now. But what does the scripture say? Get rid of the slave woman and her son, for the slave woman's son will never share in the inheritance with a free woman's son. Therefore, brothers, we are not children of the slave woman, but of the free woman.
Your translation in verse 24 uses the term figurative, right?
Yeah.
It's an allegory. Anybody know what an allegory is?
Let's take a look at Webster's.
Webster's is always good to have at your fingertips, because we often use words and we don't really know what they mean. Allegory. The expression by means of symbolic, fictional figures and actions of truths or generalizations about human existence. Or an instance, as in a story or a painting, of such an expression. Symbolic representations. The usage of symbolic characters to stand for something else. It is a method of interpretation where someone takes characters or events and makes them stand for something else to make a point. Now here he's taking a true story about Abraham and Sarah and Hagar. And he is taking this true story and interpreting it to make a point. For it is written that Abraham had two sons, one by a slave woman, and the other by a free woman. Now, who was the slave woman?
Hagar.
Who was the free woman?
Sarah.
The two sons. Who was the son from the slave woman?
Ishmael.
Who was the son of the free woman?
Isaac.
Okay. One, the child of the slave, was born according to the flesh. Was born according to the flesh.
The regular way.
The regular way? Yeah. Well,
born out of wedlock, right?
Well, she gave
Let's take a look. Let's just go take a look in Genesis and see what it says. I mean, born the regular way.
Nice and young and fertile.
Nice and young and fertile.
And known by Abraham.
And known by Abraham. Oh, hello, how are you doing? That kind of known?
Yeah.
No.
Well, that's better than, oh, who are you?
All right. We're in Genesis chapter 16. So let's turn to Genesis chapter 16. Should have known we wouldn't have been able to go through this without going back to the story that Abraham is, that Paul is allegorizing here. So let's take a look at the actual story from Genesis. Chapter 16. Now Sarai, Abram's wife, bore him no children. She had an Egyptian slave girl whose name was Hagar. And Sarai said to Abram, "You see that the Lord has prevented me from bearing children. Go into my slave girl. It may be that I shall obtain children by her." And Abram listened to the voice of Sarai. So I'm sorry, the way in which they put that, it makes it, you know, look so nice and clinical. I'm sure he listened as he was tripping over her to get into Hagar's tent. So after Abram had lived 10 years in the land of Canaan, Sarai, Abram's wife, took Hagar the Egyptian, her slave girl, and gave her to gave her to her husband Abram as a wife. Now we think, wait a minute, he's already married. Yes. People talk about wanting biblical marriage. This kind of biblical marriage? Multiple wives? Abram had several wives. No, that's not
Abram
what...
Abram was nuts.
No, well, he was old. No, we don't mean literally biblical marriage when we talk about wanting biblical marriage these days. We have a certain interpretive meaning in there. We don't mean this. Okay. Let's back it up. So after Abram lived 10 years in the land of Canaan, Sarai, Abram's wife, took Hagar the Egyptian, her slave girl, and gave her to her husband Abram as a wife. He went into Hagar, and she conceived. And when she saw that she had conceived, she looked with contempt on her mistress. What do you think that happened? What do you think that happened? Oh, yeah. Look at me.
I had a child.
I'm hot stuff.
I gave him an heir.
Yeah. I could have a kid. You old bag can't.
Not a boo-boo.
Yeah. Then Sarai said to Abram, "May the wrong done to me be on you. Look what you did. I gave my slave girl to your embrace, and when she saw that she had conceived, the Lord... She looked on me with contempt. May the Lord judge between you and me." She's hurt because Abram actually managed to do what she told him to do. And I'm sure he didn't argue about it either. Just went in and did it. Happy to do it. Okay, that right there is this little line here. One, the child of the slave, was born according to the flesh. Okay? Born according to the flesh. Now that has many multiple meanings, and that was what I was trying to get at. Born according to the flesh.
They decided.
Abram and Sarah have received a promise that Abram's going to have kids like the stars up in the heavens and the sands by the seashore. Abram's old, Sarah's old, she's barren, can't have kids, God's obviously stupid, so let's get somebody that Abram can have a kid with. So in their mind, they decide to get God's job done for God. So they took this nice, young, beautiful Egyptian slave handmaid to Sarah, they take her and let Abram make a kid with her. Because obviously God's dumb and doesn't know that Sarah can't have kids. One, the child of the slave was born according to the flesh. That's born according to the flesh. Trying to get God's job done the human way. Trying to get God's job done for God. Because God just can't do it. The other, the child of the free woman, was born through the promise. Chapter 17, verse 15. God said to Abraham, this is not the place I was looking for, but this will do. As for Sarai, your wife, you shall not call her Sarai, but Sarah shall be her name. I will bless her, and moreover, I will give you a son by her. I will bless her, and she shall give rise to nations. Kings of people shall come from her. Then Abraham fell on his face and laughed and said to himself, "Can a child be born to a man who is 100 years old? Can Sarah, who is 90 years old, bear a child?" And Abraham said to God, "Oh, that Ishmael might live in your sight." And God said, "No. But your wife Sarah shall bear you a son, and you shall name him Isaac. And I will establish my covenant with him as an everlasting covenant for his offspring after him." So right there we have a promise, and the specificity here is now it's going to be Abram and Sarai. Abraham and Sarah are going to get this kid. You tried it. Hagar, you tried to do it your own human way. You failed. And just as an aside here, because of that stupid attempt at trying to get God's job done for God, rather than trusting that God was going to do it God's own way, we have all of the trouble in the Middle East today. Talk about one sin coming back to haunt you for 4,000 years. Okay, in chapter 18, we have the laughing sequence. They said in verse 9, they said to him, "Where is your wife Sarah?" And he said, "There in the tent." Then they said, "I will surely return to you in due season, and your wife Sarah shall have a son." And Sarah was listening at the tent entrance behind him. Women haven't changed, have they? Now, Abraham and Sarah were old, advanced in age. It had ceased to be with Sarah after the manner of women. Menopause done come and gone. So Sarah laughed to herself, saying, "After I have grown old and my husband is old, shall I have pleasure?" And the Lord said to Abraham, "Why did Sarah laugh and say, 'Shall I indeed bear a child now that I'm old? Is anything too wonderful for God?'"
That says too difficult.
Anything too difficult for God? "At the set time I shall return to you in due season, and Sarah shall have a son." But Sarah denied, "I didn't laugh," for she was afraid. And he said, "Oh yes, you did laugh." They both laughed, actually. Abraham fell down laughing in front of God. "I'm old, she's old. You're kidding, right? You're kidding, right?" No. So, the specificity was given. You will have a kid. You and Sarah. And it's a promise. The child of promise. A child that is impossible by human standards. A child that is a gift of God's grace. A gift of God, period. A manifestation of God's grace, if you will. Abram and Hagar making Ishmael, that's what humans do. Trying to get God's job done for God, thinking God's done. Trying to get it done our way. Abram and Sarah making Isaac is God's way. A miracle provision. Okay? So, verse 23. All that's in verse 23. "One, the child of the slave, was born according to the flesh. The other, the child of the free woman," Sarah, "was born through the promise." Now, to be bluntly honest here, Abram and Sarah did what husband and wife do in making a baby. But God worked a miracle enabling it. I mean, Isaac wasn't born of a virgin. I mean, it wasn't that kind of a miracle birth. But what God did was he reached in.
Except on the other end of the spectrum.
He reached in and enabled. Enabled this birth. Miracle birth. But Abram and Sarah had the kid. All right? In other words, they had to do their part in response to the promise.
Which we've seen Abraham more than willing to do.
Well, he certainly was willing to do it with Hagar. All right. trying to get God's job done for God.
Huh?
Oh, please, God, don't make me go back to that old woman. No, it doesn't say that.
Why do you think he fell down laughing?
Well, there you
How
go.
How long has it been, you know? And she's laughing, too. I'm going to have pleasure at this age.
They're both laughing.
Right.
They both don't believe it.
They ain't done it in a while either.
Well, Abram did with Hagar.
That's been a few years
to ago. Them together, true.
That's been a few years back. But Ishmael's already.
That's right. Ishmael's growing up. Mm-hmm. He's not yet grown, but he's alive. One, the child of the slave, Hagar, Ishmael is the child, was born according to the flesh, i.e., people, guys, Abram and Sarah, human beings, trying to do God's will their own way. The other, the child of the free woman, that's Isaac coming from Sarah and Abraham, was born through the promise. not humans doing it the human way, but God working a miracle, doing it God's way, not our way, God's way. Now, this is an allegory. These women are two covenants. Two covenants. One woman, in fact, is Hagar from Mount Sinai, bearing children for slavery.
Ooh.
What comes from Mount Sinai?
Law.
The law came at Mount Sinai. God gave the law at Mount Sinai. Hagar is Mount Sinai in Arabia.
It gets even better.
And corresponds, is equal to, the present Jerusalem, trying to be saved by keeping the law, trying to be saved, to be righteous, to be justified by keeping the law, is trying to get God's job done for God. Trying to be saved according to the Jewish rules and regulations, trying to be a good Jew in order to be sanctified, trying to complete your Christianity by becoming a good Jew and getting circumcised and keeping the dietary regulations and keeping all the special high holy days and wearing all the kind of clothing you're supposed to wear and keeping those Ten Commandments and thinking that that's going to save you and sanctify you. Doing all that stuff is like Abram and Hagar having sex in a tent, trying to get God's will done for God. Wham.
Get into heaven by the flesh.
Getting into heaven by the flesh, in a sense. By your own works. Let's phrase this slightly differently.
Still do that today, don't we?
Oh, we do it all the time. Abram and Hagar having sex in a tent to produce Ishmael is the equivalent of good righteous living, according to your standards that you see today. A good Christian does this and doesn't do that, does this and doesn't do this other thing.
I'm good to my neighbors, I support my family.
I go to church every Sunday. All the good stuff that you do, thinking that all of that outward expression, good works, saves you and sanctifies you. That's just Abram and Hagar trying to get God's will done in the tent. No. Now, Hagar is Mount Sinai in Arabia and corresponds to the present Jerusalem, for she is in slavery with her children. You are enslaved to the law when you try to save yourself or sanctify yourself by the law. Remember, the issue was not so much that these Gentiles were not now Christians, were not yet saved. It's that the Jewish Christians were saying, you Gentile Christians need to perfect your Christianity, need to become good Jews in order to complete this. You should be sanctified by keeping the law. You got started by faith and that was good. Now go whole hog and get circumcised and keep the dietary regulations and all the other aspects of the law.
Except the hog.
Well, no hog. No hog, as the case may be. But the other woman, that's Sarah, corresponds to Jerusalem above.
The New Jerusalem.
The heavenly Jerusalem. The way God has planned for it. The life of faith, the life of grace and peace in Jesus Christ our Lord. God's way, not man's way, God's way. But the other woman, Sarah, corresponds to the Jerusalem above. She is free, and she is our mother. We're not children of the bond slave. We're not children of Hagar. We haven't been produced by good works. We haven't been produced by trying to save ourselves by doing this and not doing that and doing this and not doing that. We haven't been saved by doing good works, which is Hagar and Ishmael. We've been saved by faith, which is Abram and Sarah producing Isaac. Because that's what it took, friends. And faith is sometimes difficult. And Abram and Sarah listened. They laughed. But they listened. And they finally did what God told them to do in faith. And Isaac was conceived and born. He is setting up a no question, undeniable dichotomy here between the two paths, trying to get saved by works or saved by faith. Is it something that you do or something that God does? And he is saying here, it's what God does. It's the child of promise, not the child of the slave woman. Yes?
This would be a good one to get you in trouble over there, right, in the Middle East.
Oh, yes, it would.
Marrying children are to be slaves.
Uh-huh.
I don't think they look at it that way.
No, they don't. They don't. For it is written, "Rejoice, you childless one," that's Sarah, "you who bear no children. Burst into song and shout, you who endure no birth pangs. For the children of the desolate woman are more numerous than the children of the one who is married." That's an interesting way of putting it.
Yeah, she was married to
him. Uh-huh. The desolate woman, Sarah, has more children now than the bond slave, who produced the child the human way. God's promised production line produced more than man's paltry, though fun, attempt. And if you think about it, in terms of literalness, I mean, we've been working this in the allegory right now. Pull it back into literalness for just a moment. In addition to the Jews, who are the children of promise, you have the church, Christians, who have been branched in, grafted in, adopted in through faith. It's a promise. And Christians outnumber, literally speaking, Christians and Jews together outnumber the children of Ishmael. Literally speaking, it's also true. But the allegory he's using here is to make a slightly different point. Rejoice, you childless one, you who bear no children. Burst into song and shout, you who endure no birth pangs. For the children of the desolate woman are more numerous, greater than, literally, than the one who has a husband, than the bond slave, than Hagar, who produced a kid the natural way. Now, you, my friends, and here he's talking to the Galatians, verse 28. Now you, my friends, are children of promise, like Isaac. NAS reads, "And you, brethren, like Isaac, are children of promise." They weren't saved by works. They weren't saved by doing the law, keeping the Ten Commandments, keeping the dietary regulations, getting circumcised. All of that stuff didn't save them. All the good works did not save them. They are children. They were spiritually born by faith, by grace through faith in Jesus Christ. You, my friends, my brothers, are children of promise like Isaac. But just as at that time the child who was born according to the flesh persecuted the child who was born according to the Spirit, so it is now. Boy, it's even more true today, isn't it? But what does the scripture say? Drive out the slave and her child, for the children of the slave will not share the inheritance with the child of the free woman. So then, my brothers, we are children, not of the slave, but of the free woman. What is he using this allegory here to tell the Galatian Christians? Drive out those children of Hagar, metaphorically, allegorically speaking here. Drive out the children of works, the children of the Jerusalem that is now, the children of Mount Sinai in Arabia, the children of the law. Drive them out. Don't listen to them. Don't accept them. You are children of promise, not children of works. You are children of the promise, not children of doing it your own human way. Drive them out. Don't make place for them. Don't accept them. Live by the promise, not by works. Live by as children of the promise, not as children of the law. As children of Abram and Sarah, not as children of Abram and Hagar. Live as children of Isaac, not as children of Ishmael. Can you imagine what a horrific thing it would be to be a good Jew and hear Paul say that you, a good Jew, are a child of Ishmael, allegorically speaking?
Came right out and said it a few times.
He calls them angels and ministers of Satan. In another place, he doesn't mince words. And in the next chapter, he's going to tell them what they can do with their circumcision. We'll get to that in another week or two. This is the core and heart in terms of his argument of the whole letter. It's why the letter of the letter to the Galatians is a letter of freedom. Because we are freed from having to try and get God's will done ourselves, and freed to simply live by grace through faith in Jesus Christ and be a child of promise. It's why living God's way, living in faith, is freedom and not enslavement to the law. The law is there to teach us what we need in Jesus. The law is there to show us that we can't do it on our own. That we can try and try and try. We can try to make Ishmaels in a tent with Hagar all we want, and we can't do it. We cannot do and produce a child of promise that way. Abram and Hagar could not produce the child of promise. The child of promise was to come from Abram and Sarah, period. And had to be a miracle of God's provision. We can try and try and try. We will never get God's will done on our own. Until we trust in God's grace, until we trust and live and act in faith and be a child of promise, we can't do it.
And earlier in the Galatians, he basically said the promise is actually Christ.
Mm-hmm. Yes, the child of promise ends up being Jesus. Absolutely. In the story in Genesis, the child of promise is Isaac. And from Isaac comes Jacob, and in Jacob come the 12 tribes of Israel, including Judah, and the line comes all the way down to Jesus.
But isn't the important thing not who the child of promise was, that it was Isaac? Or
sure.
It's that the promise is a covenant. The promise,
right.
That's the important thing. That is the end all be all.
Well,
that being your covenant with God.
Yes. Look at the very beginning of this section, verse 21. Tell me, you who desire to be subject to the law. That's sarcasm. It's dripping in sarcasm. Tell me, you who desire to be subject to the law. Will you not listen to the law, to the Torah, to the story it tells about a man and a woman who didn't really trust that God could work a miracle, and so they figured out how to do it for God, and it screwed everything up? Pardon the multiple puns in there.
Again.
Oh, yeah. This is a continual story. Here they go. They've received these promises. They don't believe that God can really do it, so they're going to do it for God. And it screws everything up. And then they get the promises reiterated and focused. Nuh-uh. Not you and Hagar through Ishmael. No. You and Sarah through Isaac, the child of promise. Don't do it yourself. Trust in me. And there's a substantial thing they must do to trust. And in the case of the story in Genesis, it's Abram and Sarah getting together and do what husband and wife do to generate a child. Even though he's 100 and she's 90. Even though she's barren. It's having faith. Exercising faith in the promises of God. And though the two approaches are essentially two covenants, one the law and one faith. One the law, one Christ.
Copyright by Dr. Gregory S. Neal, all rights reserved. Visit us on the web at www.revneal.org. That's www.revneal.org. This program was produced by Dr. Greg Neal.